Wizard's First Rule by Terry Goodkind. Copyright 1994 by Terry Goodkind and performance copyright 1994 by Brilliance Corporation. All rights reserved. For Jerry. Acknowledgements. I would like to thank some special people. My father, Leo, for never once telling me to read, but instead reading himself and thus infecting me with curiosity. My good friends, Rachel Kalant and Gloria Avner, for taking on the task of reading the raw manuscript and offering valuable insights, and for their steadfast belief in me when I needed it most. My agent, Russell Galen, for having the guts to be the first to pick up the sword and making my dreams reality. My editor, James Frenkel, not only for his exceptional editorial talent, guidance, and improvements in this book, but also for his boundless good humor and patience at teaching me to be a better author along the way. The good people at Tor, one and all, for their enthusiasm and hard work. And two very special people, Richard and Kalen, for choosing me to tell their story. Their tears and triumphs have touched my heart. I will never be the same again. Wizard's First Rule. Chapter 1. It was an odd-looking vine. Dusky, variegated leaves hunkered against a stem that wound in a stranglehold around the smooth trunk of a balsam fir. Sap drooled down the wounded bark, and dry limbs slumped, making it look as if the tree were trying to voice a moan into the cool, damp morning air. Pods stuck out from the vine here and there along its length, almost seeming to look warily about for witnesses. It was the smell that had first caught his attention, a smell like the decomposition of something that had been wholly unsavory, even in life. Richard combed his fingers through his thick hair as his mind lifted out of the fog of despair, coming into focus upon seeing the vine. He scanned for others, but saw none. Everything else looked normal. The maples of the upper Venn forest were already tinged with crimson, proudly showing off their new mantle in the light breeze. With nights getting colder, it wouldn't be long before their cousins down in the Heartland Woods joined them. The oaks, being the last to surrender to the season, still stoically wore their dark green coats. Having spent most his life in the woods, Richard knew all the plants, if not by name, by sight. From when Richard was very small, his friend Zed had taken him along, hunting for special herbs. He had shown Richard which ones to look for, where they grew, and why, and put names to everything they saw. Many times they just talked, the old man always treating him as an equal, asking as much as he answered. Zed had sparked Richard's hunger to learn, to know. This vine, though, he had seen only once before, and it wasn't in the woods. He had found a sprig of it at his father's house, in the blue clay jar Richard had made when he was a boy. His father had been a trader and had traveled often, looking for the chance exotic or rare item. People of means had often sought him out, interested in what he might have turned up. It seemed to be the looking more than the finding that he had liked, as he had always been happy to part with his latest discovery so he could be off after the next. From a young age, Richard had liked to spend time with Zed while his father was away. Richard's brother, Michael, was a few years older, and, having no interest in the woods or Zed's rambling lectures, preferred to spend his time with people of means. About 5 years before, Richard had moved away to live on his own, but he often stopped by his father's home, unlike Michael, who was always busy and rarely had time to visit. If his father had gone away, he would leave Richard a message in the blue jar telling him the latest news, some gossip, or of some sight he had seen. On the day 3 weeks before, when Michael had come and told him their father had been murdered, Richard had gone to his father's house, despite his brother's insistence that there was no reason to go, nothing he could do. Richard had long since passed the age when he did as his brother said. Wanting to spare him, the people there didn't let him see the body, but still, he saw the big, sickening splashes and puddles of blood, brown and dry across the plank floor. When Richard came close, voices fell silent, except to offer sympathy, which only deepened the writhing pain. Yet he had heard them talking, in hushed tones of the stories and the wild rumors of things come out of the boundary of magic. Richard was shocked at the way his father's small home had been torn apart, as if a storm had been turned loose inside. Only a few things were left untouched. The blue message jar still sat on the shelf, and inside he found the sprig of vine. It was still in his pocket now. What his father meant him to know from it, he couldn't guess. Grief and depression overwhelmed him, and even though he still had his brother, he felt abandoned. That he was grown into manhood offered him no sanctuary from the forlorn feeling of being orphaned and alone in the world, a feeling he had known before when he was young and his mother died. Even though his father had often been away, sometimes for weeks, Richard had always known he was somewhere and would be back. Now, he would never be back. Michael wouldn't let him have anything to do with the search for the killer. He said he had the best trackers in the army looking, and he wanted Richard to stay out of it for his own good. So Richard simply didn't show the vine to Michael and went off alone every day searching for the vine. For 3 weeks, he walked the trails of the Heartland Woods, every trail, even the ones few others knew of, but he never saw it. Finally, against his better judgment, he gave in to the whispers in his mind and went to the upper Venn Forest, close to the boundary. The whispers haunted him with the feeling that he somehow knew something of why his father had been murdered. They teased at him, tantalized him with thoughts just out of reach, and laughed at him for not seeing it. Richard lectured himself that it was his grief playing tricks, not something real. He had thought that when he found the vine it would give him some sort of answer. Now that he had, he didn't know what to think. The whispers had stopped teasing him, but now they brooded. He knew it was just his own mind thinking, and he told himself to stop trying to give the whispers a life of their own. Zed had taught him better than that. Richard looked up at the big fir tree in its agony of death. He thought again of his father's death. The vine had been there. Now the vine was killing this tree. It couldn't be anything good. Though he couldn't do anything for his father, he didn't have to let the vine preside over another death. Gripping it firmly, he pulled, and with powerful muscles ripped the sinewy tendrils away from the tree. That's when the vine bit him. One of the pods struck out and hit the back of his left hand, causing him to jump back in pain and surprise. Inspecting the small wound, he found something like a thorn embedded in the meat of the gash. The matter was decided. The vine was trouble. He reached for his knife to dig out the thorn, but the knife wasn't there. At first, surprised, he realized why and reprimanded himself for allowing his depression to cause him to forget something as basic as taking his knife with him into the woods. Using his fingernails, he tried to pull out the thorn. To his rising concern, the thorn, as if alive, wiggled itself in deeper. He dragged his thumbnail across the wound, trying to snag the thorn out. The more he dug, the deeper it went. A hot wave of nausea swept through him as he tore at the wound, making it bigger. So he stopped. The thorn had disappeared into the oozing blood. Looking about, Richard spotted the purplish-red autumn leaves of a small nannyberry tree, laden with its crop of dark blue berries. Beneath the tree, nestled in the crook of a root, he found what he sought, an alm plant. Relieved, he carefully snapped off the tender stem near its base and gently squeezed the sticky, clear liquid onto the bite. He gave a smile to old Zed for teaching him how the alm plant made wounds heal faster. The soft, fuzzy leaves always made Richard think of Zed. The juice of the alm numbed the sting, but not his worry over being unable to remove the thorn. He could feel it wriggling still deeper into his flesh. Richard squatted down and poked a hole in the ground with his finger, placed the alm in it, and fixed moss about the stem so it might regrow itself. The sounds of the forest fell dead still. Richard looked up, flinching as a dark shadow swept over the ground, leaping across limbs and leaves. There was a rushing, whistling sound in the air overhead. The size of the shadow was frightening. Birds burst from cover in the trees, giving alarm calls as they scattered in all directions. Richard peered up, searching through the gaps in the canopy of green and gold, trying to see the shadow's source. For an instant, he saw something big, big and red. He couldn't imagine what it could be, but the memory of the rumors and stories of things coming out of the boundary flooded back into his mind, making him go cold to the bone. The vine was trouble, he thought again. This thing in the sky could be no less. He remembered what people always said. Trouble sires three children, and knew immediately that he didn't want to meet the third child. Discounting his fears, he started running. Just idle talk of superstitious people, he told himself. He tried to think of what could be that big and red. It was impossible. There was nothing that flew that was that large. Maybe it was a cloud or a trick of the light. But he couldn't fool himself. It was no cloud. Looking up as he ran, trying for another glimpse, he headed for the path that skirted the hillside. Richard knew that the ground dropped off sharply on the other side of the trail, and he would be able to get an unobstructed view of the sky. Tree branches, wet with rain from the night before, slapped at his face as he ran through the forest, jumping fallen trees and small rocky streams. Brush snatched at his pant legs. Dappled swatches of sunlight teased him to look up, but denied him the view he needed. His breath was fast, ragged. Sweat ran cold against his face, and he could feel his heart pounding as he ran carelessly down the hillside. At last, he stumbled out of the trees onto the path, almost falling. Searching the sky, he spotted the thing, far away and too small for him to tell what it was, but he thought it had wings. He squinted against the blue brightness of the sky, shielded his eyes with his hand, trying to see for sure if there were wings moving. It slipped behind a hill and was gone. He hadn't even been able to tell if it really was red. Winded, Richard slumped down on a granite boulder at the side of the trail, absently snapping off dead twigs from a sapling beside him while he stared down at Trunt Lake below. Maybe he should go tell Michael what had happened, tell him about the vine and the red thing in the sky. He knew Michael would laugh at the last part. He had laughed at the same stories himself. No. Michael would only be angry with him for being up near the boundary and for going against his orders to stay out of the search for the murderer. He knew his brother cared about him, or he wouldn't always be nagging him. Now that he was grown, he could laugh off his brother's constant instructions, though he still had to endure the looks of displeasure. Richard snapped off another twig and in frustration threw it at a flat rock. He decided he shouldn't feel singled out. After all, Michael was always telling everyone what to do, even their father. He pushed his harsh judgments of his brother aside. Today was a big day for Michael. Today he was accepting the position of first counselor. He would be in charge of everything now, not just the town of Heartland anymore, but all the towns and villages of Westland, even the country people, responsible for everything and everyone. Michael deserved Richard's support. He needed it. Michael had lost a father, too. That afternoon, there was to be a ceremony and big celebration at Michael's house. Important people were going to be there, come from the farthest reaches of Westland. Richard was supposed to be there, too. At least, there would be plenty of good food. He realized he was famished. While he sat and thought, he scanned the opposite side of Trunt Lake, far below. From this height, the clear water revealed alternating patches of rocky bottom and green weed around the deep holes. At the edge of the water, Hawker's trail knitted in and out of the trees, in some places open to view, in some places hidden. Richard had been on that part of the trail many times. In the spring, it was wet and soggy down by the lake, but this late in the year, it would be dry. In areas farther north and south, as the trail wound its way through the high Venn forests, it passed uncomfortably close to the boundary. Because of that, most travelers avoided it, choosing instead the trails of the Heartland Woods. Richard was a woods guide and led travelers safely through the Heartland forests. Most were traveling dignitaries wanting the prestige of a local guide more than they wanted direction. His eyes locked on something. There was movement. Unsure what it had been, he stared hard at the spot on the far side of the lake. When he saw it again, on the path where it passed behind a thin veil of trees, there was no doubt. It was a person. Maybe it was his friend Chase. Who else but a boundary warden would be wandering around up here? He hopped down off the rock, tossing the twigs aside, and took a few steps forward. The figure followed the path into the open, at the edge of the lake. It wasn't Chase. It was a woman. A woman in a dress. What woman would be walking around this far out in the Venn forest in a dress? Richard watched her making her way along the lake shore, disappearing and reappearing with the path. She didn't seem to be in a hurry, but she wasn't strolling slowly either. Rather, she moved at the measured pace of an experienced traveler. That made sense. No one lived anywhere near Trunt Lake. Other movements snatched his attention. Richard's eyes searched the shade and shadows. Behind her, there were others. Four men in hooded forest cloaks, following her, but hanging back some distance. They moved with stealth from tree to rock to tree, looking, waiting, moving. Richard straightened, his eyes wide, his attention riveted. They were stalking her. He knew immediately. This was the third child of trouble. Chapter 2. At first, Richard stood frozen, not knowing what to do. He couldn't be sure the four men really were stalking the woman, at least not until it was too late. What business was it of his anyway? And besides, he didn't even have his knife with him. What chance did one man with no weapon have against four? He watched the woman making her way along the path. He watched the men follow. What chance did the woman have? He crouched, muscles tight and hard. His heart raced as he tried to think of what he could do. The morning sun was hot on his face, his breathing rapid with fear. Richard knew there was a small cutoff from Hawker's Trail somewhere ahead of the woman. Hurriedly, he tried to remember exactly where. The main fork to her left continued around the lake and up the hill to his left, to where he stood and watched. If she stayed on the main trail, he could wait for her, then tell her about the men. Then what? Besides, that was too long. The men would be on her before then. An idea began to take shape. He sprang up and started running down the trail. If he could reach her before the men caught her and before the cutoff, he could take her up the right fork. That trail led up out of the trees onto open ledges, away from the boundary and toward the town of Heartland, toward help. If they were quick, he could hide their tracks. The men wouldn't know that the two of them had taken the side trail. They would think she was still on the main trail, at least for a while, long enough to fool them and lead her to safety. Still winded from the earlier run, Richard panted in labored breaths, running down the trail as fast as he could go. The path had quickly turned back into the trees, so at least he didn't have to worry about the men being able to see him. Shafts of sunlight flashed by as he raced along. Old pine trees lined the path, leaving a soft mat of needles to cushion his footfalls. After a time, driving himself headlong down the path, he started looking for the side trail. He couldn't be sure how far he had gone. The forest offered no view for a fix, and he didn't remember exactly where the cutoff was. It was small and would be easy to miss. With every bend bringing new hope that this would be the place he found the cutoff, he pushed himself on. He tried to think of what he would say to the woman when he finally reached her. His mind raced as fast as his legs. She might think he was with her pursuers, or be frightened by him, or not believe him. He wouldn't have much time to convince her to go with him, that he wanted to help. Coming over the top of a small rise, he looked anew for the fork, but didn't see it and kept running. Now his breath came in ragged gasps. He knew that if he didn't reach the split before she did, they would be trapped, and their only options would be to outrun the men or to fight. He was too winded for either. That thought drove him on harder. Sweat ran down his back, making his shirt stick to his skin. The coolness of the morning had turned to choking heat, though he knew it was only his exertion that made it seem that way. The forest passed in a blur to each side as he ran. Just before a sharp bend to the right, he came at last to the cutoff, almost missing it. He made a quick search for tracks to see if she had been there and taken the small path. There were none. Relief washed over him. He dropped to his knees and sat back on his heels in exhaustion, trying to catch his breath. The first part had worked. He had beaten her here. Now he had to make her believe him before it was too late. Holding his right hand over a painful stitch in his side, and still trying to catch his breath, he started to worry that he was going to look silly. What if it was just a girl and her brothers playing a game? He would be the fool. Everyone but him would have a good laugh. He looked down at the bite on the back of his hand. It was red and throbbed painfully. He remembered the thing in the sky. He thought about the way she had been walking with a sense of purpose, not like a child at play. It was a woman, not a girl. He remembered the cold fear he had felt when he saw the four men. Four men warily shadowing a woman. The third strange thing to happen this morning. The third child of trouble. No, he shook his head. This was no game. He knew what he had seen. It was no game. They were stalking her. Richard came partway to his feet. Waves of heat rolled from his body. Bent over at the waist with his hands braced on his knees, he took a few deep breaths before straightening to his full height. His eyes fell on the young woman as she came around the bend in front of him. His breath caught for an instant. Her brown hair was full, lush, and long, complementing the contours of her body. She was tall, almost as tall as he, and about the same age. The dress she wore was like none he had ever seen, almost white, cut square at the neck, interrupted only by a small, tan leather waist pouch. The weave of the fabric was fine and smooth, almost glistening, and bore none of the lace or frills he was used to seeing, no prints or colors to distract from the way it caressed her form. The dress was elegant in its simplicity. She halted, and long, graceful folds, regally trailing her, gathered about her legs. Richard approached and stopped three strides away so as not to appear a threat. She stood straight and still, her arms at her side. Her eyebrows had the graceful arch of a raptor's wings in flight. Her green eyes came unafraid to his. The connection was so intense that it threatened to drain his sense of self. He felt that he had always known her, that she had always been a part of him, that her needs were his needs. She held him with her gaze as surely as a grip of iron would, searching his eyes as if searching his soul, seeking an answer to something. "I am here to help you," he said in his mind. He meant it more than any thought he had ever had. The intensity of her gaze relaxed, loosening its hold on him. In her eyes, he saw something that attracted him more than anything else. Intelligence. He saw it flaring there, burning in her, and through it all, he felt an overriding sense of her integrity. Richard felt safe. A warning flashed in his mind, making him remember why he was there, that time was dear. "I was up there," he pointed toward the hill he had been on, "and I saw you." She looked where he pointed. He looked, too, and realized he was pointing at a tangle of tree limbs. They couldn't see the hill because the trees blocked the view. He dropped his arm dumbly, trying to ignore the miscue. Her eyes returned to his, waiting. Richard started over, keeping his voice low. "I was up there on a hill, above the lake. I saw you walking on the path by the shore. There are some men following you." She betrayed no emotion, but continued to hold his gaze. "How many?" He thought her question strange, but answered it. "Four." The color drained from her face. She turned her head, surveying the woods behind her, scanning the shadows briefly, then looked back to him once more, her green eyes searching his. "Do you choose to help me?" Except for her color, her exquisite features gave no hint as to her emotions. Before his mind could form a thought, he heard himself say, "Yes." Her countenance softened. "What would you have us do?" "There's a small trail that turns off here. If we take it, and they stay on this one, we can be away."
"And if they don't? If they follow our trail?"
"I'll hide our tracks." He was shaking his head, trying to reassure her. "They won't follow. Look, there's no time."
"If they do," she cut him off. "Then what is your plan?"
He studied her face a moment.
"Are they very dangerous?"
She stiffened.
"Very."
The way she spoke the word made him have to force himself to breathe again. For an instant, he saw a look of blind terror pass across her eyes.
Richard ran his fingers through his hair. Well, the small trail is narrow and sheer. They won't be able to surround us.
Do you have a weapon?
He answered by shaking his head no, too angry with himself for forgetting his knife to voice it out loud. She nodded.
Let's be quick, then.
They didn't talk once the decision had been made, not wanting to give away their location. Richard hurriedly concealed their tracks and motioned her to go first so he would be between her and the men. She didn't hesitate. The folds of her dress flowed behind as she moved quickly at his direction. The lush, young evergreens of the Venn pressed tight at their sides, making the path a narrow, dark, green-walled route cut through the brush and branches. They could see nothing around them. Richard checked behind as they went, though he couldn't see far. At least what he could see was clear. She went swiftly, without any encouragement from him. After a time, the ground started rising and becoming rockier, and the trees thinned, offering a more open view. The trail twisted along deeply shaded cuts in the terrain and across leaf-strewn ravines. Dry leaves scattered at their passing. Pines and spruce gave way to hardwood trees, mostly white birch, and as the limbs swayed overhead, little patches of sunlight danced on the forest floor. The birch's white trunks with black spots made it look as if hundreds of eyes were watching the two pass. Other than the raucous racket of some ravens, it was a very quiet, peaceful place. At the base of a granite wall that the path followed, he motioned to her, putting a finger over his lips, letting her know they had to step carefully to avoid making sounds that would echo their location. Whenever a raven cawed, he could hear it reverberate through the hills. Richard knew this place. The shape of the rock wall could carry a sound for miles. He pointed to the moss-covered round rocks littering the flat forest floor. He showed her that he meant for the two of them to step on the rocks to avoid snapping sticks hidden under the leaf litter. He moved some leaves to show her sticks hidden there and pretended to break them, then cupped his hand to his ear. She nodded her understanding, lifted her skirts with one hand, and began to step up on the rocks. He touched her arm to make her look back again and mimed slipping and falling, to let her know she had to be careful because the moss was slippery. She smiled and nodded again before hurrying on. Seeing her smile was unexpected, and it warmed him, softening the edge of his fear. Richard allowed himself a small dose of confidence about their escape as he stepped from one mossy rock to another. As the path climbed steadily upward, the trees thinned more. The rock taking over from the soil offered trees infrequent opportunity to put down roots. Soon, the only trees grew in crevices and were gnarled, twisted, and small, wanting to offer no purchase to the wind that could pull them from their meager anchoring. They slipped quietly out of the trees and onto the ledges. The path wasn't always clearly marked, and there were many false trails. She often had to turn to him, and he directed her by pointing or with a nod of his head. Richard wondered what her name was, but his fear of the four men kept him from talking. Even though the trail was steep and hard, he didn't have to slow on her account. She was a strong climber and quick. He saw that she wore good boots of soft leather, the kind of boots worn by one used to traveling. It had been well over an hour since they had come out of the trees, climbing steadily upward into the sun. They were heading east on the ledges before the trail cut back to the west later. The men, if they had followed, would have to look into the sun to see them. Richard kept them crouched as low as possible and checked over his shoulder often as they climbed, scanning for any sign of the men. When he had seen them by Trunt Lake, they were staying well hidden, but it was too open out here for them to hide. He saw nothing and started to feel better. They weren't being followed. The men were nowhere to be seen and were probably miles down Hawker's Trail by now. The farther from the boundary and the closer to town they got, the better he felt. His plan had worked. Seeing no sign that they were being followed, Richard wished they could stop for a rest as his hand was throbbing, but she gave no sign that she needed or wanted a break. She kept pushing on as if the men were right on their heels. Richard remembered the look on her face when he had asked if they were dangerous and quickly rejected any thought of stopping. As morning wore on, the day became warm for this late in the year. The sky was a bright, clear blue, with only a few white, wispy clouds drifting by. One of the clouds had taken on the undulating form of a snake, with its head down and tail up. Because it was so unusual, Richard remembered seeing the same cloud earlier in the day. Or was it yesterday? He would have to remember to mention it to Zed the next time he saw him. Zed was a cloud reader, and if Richard failed to report his sighting, he would have to endure an hour-long lecture on the significance of clouds. Zed was probably watching at this very moment, fretting over whether or not Richard was paying attention. The path took them to the south face of Small Blunt Mountain, where it crossed a sheer cliff face for which the mountain was named. Crossing the cliff near mid-height, the trail offered a panoramic view of the southern Venn Forest and, to their left, in cloud and mist, almost hidden behind the cliff wall, the high, rugged peaks belonging to the boundary. Richard saw brown, dying trees standing out against the carpet of green. Up closer to the boundary, the dead trees were thick. It was the vine, he realized. The two of them advanced quickly across the cliff trail. They were so clearly in the open, with no chance to hide, that anyone could spot them easily. But across the cliff, the trail would begin to head down into the Heartland Woods and then into town. Even if the men did figure out their mistake and follow, Richard and the woman had a safe lead. As it neared the far side of the cliff face, the path started to broaden from its treacherous, narrow width to a space wide enough for two to walk side by side. Richard trailed his right hand along the rock wall for reassurance while looking over the side to the boulder fields several hundred feet below. He turned and checked behind, still clear. As he turned back, she froze in mid-stride, the folds of her dress swirling around her legs. In the trail ahead, that only a moment earlier had been empty, stood two of the men. Richard was bigger than most men. These men were much bigger than he. Their dark, green hooded cloaks shaded their faces, but couldn't conceal their heavily muscled bulk. Richard's mind raced, trying to conceive of how the men could have gotten ahead of them. Richard and the woman spun, prepared to run. From the rock above, two ropes dropped down, and the other two men plummeted to the path, landing on their feet with heavy thuds. They blocked any retreat. They were as big as the first two. Buckles and leather straps beneath their cloaks held an arsenal of weapons that glinted in the sunlight. Richard wheeled back to the first two. They calmly pushed their hoods back. Each had thick, blonde hair and a thick neck. Their faces were rugged, handsome.
"You may pass, boy. Our business is with the girl." The man's voice was deep, almost friendly. Nonetheless, the threat was as sharp as a blade. He removed his leather gloves and tucked them in his belt as he spoke, not bothering to look at Richard. He obviously didn't consider Richard an obstacle. He appeared to be the one in charge, as the other three waited silently while he spoke. Richard had never been in a situation like this before. He had always managed to avoid trouble. He never allowed himself to lose his temper and could usually turn scowls to smiles with his easy manner. If talk didn't work, he was quick enough and strong enough to stop threats before anyone was hurt, and if need be, he would simply walk away. He knew these men weren't interested in talking, and they clearly weren't afraid of him. He wished he could walk away now. Richard glanced to her green eyes and saw the visage of a proud woman beseeching his help. He leaned closer and kept his voice low but firm.
"I won't leave you."
Relief washed over her face. She gave a slight nod as she settled her hand lightly on his forearm.
"Keep between them. Don't let them all come at me at once," she whispered. "And be sure you aren't touching me when they come."
Her hand tightened on his arm and her eyes held his, waiting for confirmation that he understood her instructions. He didn't understand her reasons, but gave a small nod of agreement.
"May the good spirits be with us," she said.
She let her hands drop to her sides, turning to the two behind them, her face dead calm, devoid of emotion.
"Be on your way, boy."
The leader's voice was harder, His fierce blue eyes glared. He gritted his teeth. Last time offered.
Richard swallowed hard. He tried to sound sure of himself.
We will both be passing.
His heart felt as if it were coming up into his throat.
Not this day, the leader said with finality. He pulled free a wicked-looking curved knife. The man to his side pulled a short sword clear of the scabbard strapped across his back. With a depraved grin, he drew it across the inside of his muscled forearm, staining the blade red. From behind, Richard could hear the ring of steel being drawn. He was paralyzed with fear. This was all happening too fast. They had no chance, none. For a brief moment, no one moved. Richard flinched when the four gave the howling battle cries of men prepared to die in mortal combat. They charged in a frightening rush. The one with the short sword swung it high, coming at Richard. He could hear one of the men behind him grab the woman as the man with the sword raced toward him. And then, just before the man reached him, there was a hard impact to the air, like a clap of thunder with no sound. The violence of it made every joint in his body cry out in sharp pain. Dust lifted around them, spreading outward in a ring. The man with the sword felt the pain of it too, and for an instant his attention was diverted past Richard to the woman. As he came crashing forward, Richard fell back against the wall and with both feet hit the man square in the chest as hard as he could. It knocked him clear of the path, into mid-air. The man's eyes went wide in surprise as he dropped backward to the rocks below, the sword still held over his head in both hands. To Richard's shock, he saw one of the other two men from behind him falling through space too, his chest ripped and bloody. Before Richard could give it a thought, the leader with the curved knife charged past, intent on the woman. He hammered the heel of his free hand into the center of Richard's chest. The jolt knocked the wind out of him and flung him hard against the wall, smacking his head against the rock. As he fought to remain conscious, his only thought was that he had to stop the man from getting to her. Summoning strength he didn't know he had, Richard snatched the leader by his husky wrist and spun him around. The knife came around in an arc toward him. The blade flashed in the sunlight. There was a savage hunger in the man's blue eyes. Richard had never been so afraid in his life. In that instant, he knew he was about to die. Seemingly from out of nowhere, the last man, with a short sword covered in gore, smashed into the leader, driving his sword through the other's gut, slamming the wind out of him. The collision was so fierce it carried both over the side of the cliff. All the way down, the last man howled in a cry of rage that ended only when they met the boulders below. Richard stood stunned, staring over the edge. Reluctantly, he turned to the woman, afraid to look, terrified he would see her gashed open and lifeless. Instead, she was sitting on the ground, leaning against the cliff wall, looking drained, but unhurt. Her face had a faraway look. It was all over so fast he couldn't understand what had happened or how. Richard and the woman were alone in the sudden silence. He slumped down beside her on rock, warm from the sun. He had a powerful headache from having his head whacked on the wall. Richard could see she was all right, so he didn't ask. He felt too overwhelmed to talk and could sense the same in her. She noticed blood on the back of her hand and wiped it off on the wall, adding it to the red splatters already there. Richard thought he might throw up. He couldn't believe they were alive. It didn't seem possible. What was the thunder without sound and the pain he felt when it had happened? He had never felt anything like it before. He shuddered, recalling it. Whatever it was, she had something to do with it, and it had saved his life. Something unearthly had occurred, and he wasn't at all sure he wanted to know what it was. She leaned her head back against the rock, rolling it to the side toward him.
I don't even know your name. I wanted to ask before, but I was afraid to talk.
She vaguely indicated the drop-off.
I was so frightened of them. I didn't want them to find us.
He thought maybe she was about to cry and looked over at her. She wasn't, but he felt that he might. He nodded his understanding of what she said about the men.
My name is Richard Cipher.
Her green eyes studied his as he looked over at her, the light breeze carrying some wisps of hair across her face. She smiled.
There are not many who would have stood with me.
He found her voice as attractive as the rest of her. It matched the spark of intelligence in her eyes. It almost took his breath away.
You are a very rare person, Richard Cipher.
To his intense displeasure, Richard felt his face flush. She looked away, pulling the strands of hair off her face and pretended not to notice his blushing.
I am...
She sounded as if she was going to say something she then thought better of. She turned back to him.
I am Kaelin. My family name is Amnell.
He looked into her eyes a long moment.
You too are a very rare person, Kaelin Amnell. There are not many who would have stood as you did.
She did not blush, but gave him another smile. It was an odd sort of smile, a special smile, not showing any teeth, but with her lips pressed together, as one would when taking another into one's confidence. Her eyes sparkled with it. It was a smile of sharing. Richard reached behind, felt the painful lump on the back of his head, and checked his fingers for blood. There was none, though he thought that by all rights there should have been. He looked back at her, again wondering what had happened, wondering what she had done and how she had done it. There was that thunder with no sound, and he had knocked one of the men off the cliff. One of the two behind him had killed the other instead of her, and then killed the leader and himself.
Well, Kaelin, my friend, can you tell me how it is that we are alive and those four men are not?
She looked at him in surprise.
Do you mean that?
Mean what? She hesitated.
Friend.
Richard shrugged.
Sure. You just said I stood with you. That's the kind of thing a friend does, isn't it?
He gave her a smile.
Kaelin turned away.
I don't know. She fingered the sleeve of her dress as she looked down. I have never had a friend before, except maybe my sister. He felt the pain in her voice.
Well, you have one now, he said in his most cheerful tone. After all, we just went through something pretty frightening together. We helped each other and we survived.
She simply nodded. Richard looked out over the Venn, the forest where he was so at home. Sunlight made the green of the trees vibrant, lush. His eyes were drawn to the left, to spots of brown, the dead and dying trees that stood out among their healthy neighbors. Until that morning, when he found the vine and it bit him, he had had no idea that the vine was up by the boundary, spreading through the woods. He rarely went up into the Venn, that close to the boundary. Older people wouldn't go within miles of it. Others went closer if they traveled on Hawker's Trail or to hunt, but none went too close. The boundary was death. It was said that to go into the boundary was not only to die, but to forfeit your soul. The boundary wardens made sure people stayed away. He gave her a sideways glance.
So, what about the other part? The part about us being alive? How did that happen?
Kaelin didn't meet his gaze.
I think the good spirits protected us.
Richard didn't believe a word of it. But as much as he wanted to know the answers, it was against his nature to force someone to tell something she didn't want to. His father had raised him to respect another person's right to keep his own secrets. In her own time, she would tell him her secrets, if she wanted to, but he would not try to force her. Everyone had secrets. He certainly had his own. In fact, with his father's murder and with today's events, he felt those secrets stirring unpleasantly in the back of his mind.
Kaelin,
he said, trying to make his voice sound reassuring.
Being a friend means you don't have to tell me anything you don't want to, and I'll still be your friend.
She didn't look at him, but nodded her agreement. Richard got to his feet. His head hurt, his hand hurt, and now he realized his chest hurt where the man had hit him. To top it off, he remembered he was hungry.
Michael! He had forgotten about his brother's party.
He looked at the sun and knew he was going to be late. He hoped he wouldn't miss Michael's speech.
He would take Kaylin, tell Michael about the men, and get some protection for her.
He held out his hand to help her up. She stared at it in surprise. He continued to hold it out for her. She gazed up into his eyes and took the hand. Richard smiled.